Blog Talk Radio.
Groomer.com, Groomer Talk Community with Groomer Talk Radio. This is actually our last show of the year, 2013. We're going to be closing the show today with Colin Taylor. First, I do want to bring you up to date. We awarded our two wall Figura model clippers to a pay it forward contest at the board, and that went quite well. We had quite a few entries. What we have going on right now is another contest. It's not pay it forward. Pretty simple to enter. Just go to the board, but you can win. And it's our sixth annual Metro Master Blaster High Velocity Dryer giveaway. Just go to Groomer Talk Community at petgroomer.com and go to the message board. It tells you how to enter, mostly just posting your name and a little bit of tiny sort of like trivia thing you got to do, and then we'll be having the drawing in mid-December before Christmas for that. So take a chance on it. These are the top of the line model, and we thank Metro for making this possible now 6 years in a row. We will start the radio back up again in January, and I've got quite a bit of names coming up. In fact, we may have to go every week because we've had so much interest with people that want to come on. And so we welcome that. And winter's a good time. Internet very busy, while some of our groomers in the harsh winter areas spend a bit more time online. Now, getting to today's guest, some of you, a lot of you, probably heard of Colin Taylor. I know I've seen him many times on the cover of Groomer to Groomer magazine, his website, so we thought it'd be great to bring him aboard. He's come out with a new book, and we want to talk with him about that. He is calling in today from London, so let me take a moment here and try to get Colin on the line. Colin,
hello,
are you
how
there?
Are you? Yes,
I'm
I am. How
fine.
Are you doing?
Oh, it's just another hectic Monday here.
Oh, wait.
After the weekend.
Absolutely. Well, it's Tuesday here right now.
That's right. That's right. Now, there's some people, we do get a lot of career seekers, and so we'd like to take a little bit of time. It's your first time on the show. I'd like you to go over, and don't worry about taking some time, but let us know, especially for our newbies, who is Colin Taylor in the grooming field? How did you decide to become a pet groomer?
Well, that goes back all the way back to 1985. I was, as a young boy working in a pet shop, and I used to go to the pet shop after school and work a couple of hours, and that was my weekend job also, and I was the livestock manager, which I was so excited about, because at that point in my life, I wanted to be a zookeeper. However, I didn't have a very good time at school with my learning education, and so I'd had to take like a different avenue. And one day, a lady came in the shop to buy some nail clippers, and I was talking to her, and I said, are these for your own dog's nails? And she went, no, I'm a dog groomer. And I'm like, ah, really? And from that day on, I went home and talked to my mum and dad, and I got them to the Yellow Pages, because I didn't have a computer back then, and there was only two grooming schools in the UK at that time, and so I signed up and I went to grooming school July of 1985, and it all started from there. And, sorry, what was that?
You were going to school. Where did you go to school? What was the actual name of the school over there then?
I went to school at the London Academy of Grooming. It was a lady called Gillian East who taught me how to groom. She's still around to today. She has a grooming school in Cheltenham in the UK, and she's been like a one of many stepmothers of mine, and she always keeps up on my progress, and she's very proud of me, and I owe her a great deal to her, because I always tell people when they're looking to get into grooming. But of course, you have to continue your education throughout your life. But the real foundation comes down to where you went to school. So it's very, very important. But people do research on the schools to make sure they're going to a reputable one.
How long was your program in the school at that time?
The program at the school then, it was 12 weeks, and now it's changed because the grooming schools in the UK and the Americans will be amazed, and I teach also for a living, and our courses run for 20 days, and it really is tough to get a student up to scratch. And to be honest, you can never ever say to a student but they're going to be 100% confident, especially after 20 days. I mean, even after 12 weeks, grooming is a thing that you, is a passion that you develop over time. It could take you, there's very few naturals. So, and I think because we all learn differently, some people may excel in one aspect of grooming and not so much in another aspect of it. So, it's one of them things where you are always, always learning, including myself. I mean, I've been grooming close to 30 years now, and I'm still, I do seminars, and I have people in the audience who ask me questions, and they kind of say things. I'm like, oh, you know what? They got a really good point there. So I'm always learning also. So it's one of them things where you are only as good as you want to be, and there's many, many ways of continue your education, seminars, grooming competitions, online, online education programs, which I'll talk a little bit about a little bit later. But, I always tell people, it's so important, because that way you can, you will always develop your skills. Every single day you'll see, something change in your grooming, which wasn't there yesterday.
Exactly. And, we're very big on continuing education at petgroomer.com. I want to go back, though. When you got out of school, did you go work for someone for a while before you became employed for yourself?
It was really funny. When I finished my schooling, I was 15 years old, remember, and it wasn't a matter of, making money. It was making enough money to buy Chinese food once a week. So me and my friend Tina, we would groom in my bedroom, which my parents were not happy about. And my mum would always shout out to me. She goes, "Is your bedroom clean?" I say, "Yes, Mum." And I used to groom dogs on, on a dresser, which had four drawers in it. And I used to put all my clothes in the last three drawers. And the top drawer was for dog hair. And, I was a boy, a 15-year-old boy. And so I'd say, "Yes, the room's clean." And I'd pull the drawer out. I'd sweep the hair into the drawer, then shut it. And then she would come up and check, and she'd have an absolute cow at me, because she'd be saying, you got to do this. And then over time, I went back to the school that I did my education at, and then Jill gave me like an apprenticeship to go on further to learn. And then that was in 1985. And then in 1987, I went to Hong Kong for 2 years to do a 2-year contract. And that's where I learned how to really develop my scissoring. So really when I, like today when I'm teaching students, to go out and actually make a living in the business. With me, it was a matter of, I just groomed a couple of dogs here, and I worked in the pet shop still, and, it was really a part-time passion I had, and then it developed into a full-time passion, and then, to what I do today.
So after Hong Kong, where did you go?
After Hong Kong, I was in Hong Kong from 87 to 89. I came back to the UK, and then I attended the World Championship competition, which was held in Windsor. That was in 1989. and that's where I met Liz Paul, Dina Perry, John and Vivian Nash, Terry DiMarino, Connie Hirschberger. I met all these American groomers. And that's when I, you know, and Lynn Carver too. Lynn Carver was talking to me, and she said, you know what, you got incredible scissor work, you should come to America. And I'm like, you know what, I'd love to go to America. And by this age, I was 19, and I was eager to travel the world and see more of what I could learn. And so I was talking to Dina Perry, and Dina Perry offered me a job. And the next thing I know, I'm on a plane going to Detroit. And I remember it because it was in, it was the first in August, because I went there to compete at the Jerry Schimberg All-American Grooming Show. And then I staggered, I went back and forth, and then my last trip of going to Michigan to actually stay for a long permanent time was in February. And I remember the plane coming out of the clouds, and I'm seeing all this snow, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what's all this bad weather? Because, you know, when you're a child and you're naive, you think of America as being sunny because you go to California and Florida, you don't really see the snow. So I didn't only learn how to groom, you know, improve my grooming skills, I also learned how to drive in the snow, which was fun.
our industry can, Hollywood can really represent its area and what it's like, the West. Even
absolutely.
Too far up in the West, and it gets pretty cold, actually. We're up in the Seattle area, and, you know, it's not quite like what we would see, the Hollywood image of America, absolutely. We're near Seattle.
Yeah, so are you a Seahawks fan?
Yes, we are.
And are you a Macklemore and Brian Lewis fan?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Absolutely, very good. Okay.
So what can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the U.S. grooming industry, and then perhaps how it compares to the U.K.?
Oh my God, this is a loaded question. I don't want to upset the UK groom. I don't want to upset you. You know what, the UK people. But this has been a question that's asked me a lot. You know, I moved back to the UK in 2008, and you know, the UK grooming industry has come on leaps and bounds. You know, and which has got nothing to do with me. It's just got to do with a lot of people that have really helped the industry. I would say the difference in the mentality of the people, the Americans are really, American people are gung-ho people when it comes to winning. They are, it's almost a gene which they have as a child. And I remember living in America, I lived there for so long, I've taken many of my friends' kids to football games and all this kind of stuff, and it's taught to American children to be winners. Which I think is incredible. And I remember watching the Olympics as a kid, and I used to think, oh my God, them Americans are so obnoxious, because they're like, yeah, we're going to win. But you know what? They always did. And it was either America or China. And it's two countries that are, you know, which are really keen on when it comes to being the best they can possibly be. And so it was a real eye-opener for me, living in America and having this installed in myself also, where it wasn't a matter of just going there to take part, and, you know, where a lot of people have the mentality where it's not about winning, it's about taking part, which I think is also very important. But I also think it's, you know, to have that drive, you know, like American people do, to go out and to be the best they can possibly be and to compete in competitions and knowing yourself that you have a very good chance of winning because of your background and because of the talent that you hold, I think is really, really rich. And, I mean, I've never, ever said again, but I think Americans are obnoxious when it comes to that part, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff in life, because I think it's really, really important. I think the grooming industry as a whole, as far as grooming between America and England, is very, very similar. The American grooming is a lot more extreme. The English grooming is a lot more subtle. both, you know, and when it comes to breed standard grooming, they both do very, very nice work. The American groomers may look at the English groomer and say, oh, it's not extreme enough, and vice versa. The English will look at the Americans and say, no, that's way too extreme. However, the overall picture is very, very similar. It's just slight differences, and, you know, in the way they groom. But and I think when it comes to everyday pet grooming, which a lot of us are, because I don't classify myself as a show groomer, I'm a pet groomer. I go to work, I groom pet dogs, and I do good work. I don't do amazing work because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm teaching students how to make a living. I'm not teaching students how to do competition work. If they want to learn that, then they can come back to me, or I can recommend them to go somewhere else to learn that aspect of the actual industry. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the industry is about pet grooming, so that's what I really try and focus on.
Sure. My parents coined the term, they called it commercial grooming, is what, you know.
Absolutely.
Excuse me,
absolutely.
They, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Now, you competed a great deal. I mean, you have a lot of titles during those 20 years that you were here. What can you tell the people about some of the titles and what do you think about competition?
You know what? I mean, I tell people about the phases in my career that I went through. I went from being a student, and then I went from being a person who was learning about the breed standards and how to be a perfectionist, and then I went from there into my competition life. And I've won some, I've achieved some great titles. I've been on Groom Team USA, Intergroom, International Groomer of the Year. You know, I mean, all my awards I'm very, very proud of. One which was a scissor award from the famous poodle handler, Kazu Saka, who grooms just amazingly. So to have a scissor award from him was a real, was a real big honor. And obviously the Hershey Groom Olympics. excuse me, I got a little cough too. I think the competition part of my life I wanted to do because I wanted to understand more of the breed standard grooming. And I will always hold that close to my heart. And even in the school I, you know, teach at, I do competition grooming, but there's a time and a place in the day where I do that, which is either late in the afternoon or I might even do on a day which I'm not teaching. Because like I said today, you know, like I said earlier on, we are teaching commercial grooming. And I think before we go into the competition grooming, you've got to learn, you've got to start with the basics. But my competition career, I mean, I absolutely loved it. I competed from 1989 till 2006. And 2006 was my last show in Burbank, California, which I won best in show with a poodle. I really think Barbara Prokel should have won it, but I did win it. But, you know, that's neither here or there. And you kind of become real hard on your own grooming, and you look around, and, you know, but that, once again, that competitive instinct was installed in me. So I was always going to a competition, hopefully to win. And you know what? There were some times I won, and I totally deserved it, and there were some times I won, and I totally didn't deserve it in my eyes, I should say. I won't say it was because anybody did anything wrong. It's just because I think when you're really hard on your work and the way you look at your work and you know in yourself, when I used to get up in the morning and if I wasn't nervous, that means that I shouldn't even compete, because for me to do well in the ring, I would have to be really, 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 really nervous, and then I would really perform well. So I think, you know, but like I said, we all act different, don't we, in certain circumstances. When I talk to people about the competition, you know, and people go to competitions either to compete, to watch the competition, or to, you know, see the seminars, what's going on, and I try and encourage people as much as I can. You know what, it's just good to go, get in the ring, compete, and then you will see when, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that you're going to place 100% or you're not going to place, but when you don't place, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody in that ring, are winners. And if they do not place, it's very important to get a critique from the judges so they know what to do better next time, what they can do to improve their grooming. So, you know.
Right.
If that answers your question,
I remember
too much.
You got on the cover of Groomer to Groomer so many times. That was awesome to see your grooms there. And
absolutely.
I believe you won the 2006 World Cup Grooming Games at down in Burbank, California.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, International Groomer of the Year in 2004. So you've had a wonderful career during your time in the U.S. But
absolutely.
That came around, and what made you, did you sort of want to go home, or what led you to go back?
Well, it was basically my parents. They actually, it was 2008. I was, coming on 40 years old, and my parents are getting older, and I didn't want to get that horrible phone call that you kind of dread because your parents are getting up in age and all that kind of stuff. And I said to my mum and dad, but I was coming back, and they said, no, don't come back, which sounds terrible. I'm like, well, don't you want me back? But they said, you know what, it's changed here in London, you know what, it's not the same, it's not as it used to be. Anyway, because I thought maybe I was missing out on something because I left at such an early age, I moved back to London, and when I moved back, my parents were on a cruise, so it wasn't like they were bedridden or anything like that, but
right.
that worry still was there. So I did come back to London, and I probably cried every single day for like 8 months because I missed America so much. And it wasn't so much that it was the whole fact, but that was my life. I mean, all my friends are there. And so it's a big part of my life that, which I kind of didn't throw it away, because I never will throw it away, because I hope to move back there one day. But it was the whole fact, but oh my God, I'm in my own country, but it's so foreign at the same time. I mean, at 40 years old, trying to go out and make friends is not easy. So that really made me, it made me miss America even more, and it made me miss my friends even more. And the grooming industry, because we go to grooming shows sometimes back-to-back weekends in America, you know, the people at them shows are your family. I mean, Dina Perry, she's like my mother. Melissa Verplank's like my mother. Terry DiMarino's like a mother. You know, so you got all these people where if I had a problem, then I knew I could go to these people. And so when I came here, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I don't know anybody here. And actually, the funny thing was, when I came back here, I was classified as the obnoxious American because I was like the know-it-all. But, you know, so that's why I did move back to England.
And how did you go about, did you start with the academy, or after 2008, before you opened the academy, what was that like?
I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I've always been like some kind of wandering gypsy. If you ask any groomer in America, they will say, Colin, I'm like a traveler. I love to learn. I love to travel and learn from people. And when I moved back to London, because it was such a spontaneous thing, which I find myself always doing, I wasn't quite sure of what avenue I wanted to take, whether I wanted to open up a salon, or whether I wanted to work for somebody, or whether I wanted to teach. So I spent a few weeks just chilling out with my family, and then I went to Scotland and helped a friend out there. And then I came back to London and worked at a salon called Absolutely Animals with Heidi Anderton, and we started up a school there, and it went really, really well. And then I was there for, I think, 4.5 years, and then I wanted to venture out by myself, and start up the Colin Taylor Academy and teach, but not make that the only thing I wanted to do. I wanted to do other things with some product, and I wanted to write the book, and I wanted to write more books, and I wanted to start my own line of scissors. So I figured the Colin Taylor Academy was a good umbrella for all them different things I wanted to do. And that's how I got started.
How much work is it to set up a school in the UK? We have state licensing here. Of course, every state is, some are easy, some are more difficult. Is it a lot of work in the UK to open a school?
No, it's not. You know, there's no Board of Education license. You can open up a grooming school. I mean, and, you know, it's kind of scary, really, because, I mean, anybody can open up a grooming school. Anybody can be a groomer. If you want to open up a grooming school, and many of them do, you'll see grooming schools popping up all over the place because people do see the money that can be made in grooming schools. So, you know, I mean, one day you'll see somebody selling their grooming salon due to ill health, and then the next week you'll see them advertising grooming courses. So there is no kind of licensing or registration. However, we have the City and Guilds over here, which is City and Guilds is a governing qualification. You can be a City and Guilds qualified plumber, you can be a City and Guilds qualified electrician and dog groomer and vet nurse, so on and so forth. And so there are the qualifications which people do try to achieve, which obviously gives them, you know, more kudos. And so when it comes to open up the grooming school, it does help. However, I will say this, you know what, in my experience, to be a good teacher, you don't necessarily have to be the best groomer in the world, and you don't have to have awards, and you don't have to have any kind of, you know, qualifications, you know, and not that I don't push that, because I do push people to have all them things. However, you know, you have to be a people person, because when you're teaching students of all different ages and, you know, so on and so forth, you have to know how to talk to people, and you have to be a good groomer, because once again, we're teaching pet grooming. I want things to be achievable for students to get. I don't want to show them how to groom a show Bichon, and when I know for a fact how long it took me to learn how to groom them, and I still don't groom them perfectly. So, you know, I want to teach things to people that they can leave at the end of the day and feel good about what they've done, and it is achievable, and they can carry on to try and achieve it to be better over time.
So tell us a little bit more, how do you really handle 20, it's 20 days, that's the course. If I came to go to your school, I would go 20 days.
20 days, yes.
And then if they want more, how do they get more education if they want to?
Well, you know, I mean, every grooming school has a 20-day, I think the longest course somebody offers is a 30-day. When people come to me to learn, you know, I take them on initially a 20-day course. However, they can come back as many days as they want after for more experience. Because, you know, at the bottom of my heart, I understand, but 20 days is not long enough. And you have to look at some of the problems that you see in the world, in the grooming industry, not just in the UK, but around the world. And it comes down to, once again, like I was saying, it comes down to where you did go to school, and it comes down to your education, because, you know, we all, you know, when a teacher teaches us to do things a certain way, we hope and we think that is the right way. So, so when somebody signs up on a 20-day course with me, on their first day, obviously they come in, we do like a introduction and all the health and safety, because the UK is health and safety crazy, and then I put them right into the deep end. They're washing and drying dogs, and they have a pair of scissors in their hand on their first day, because I want them to, you know, to have a go. I mean, and also with me, I'm only teaching two students at a time. So I'm in a small shop, with two students, and I'm in that room 24/7 watching them. So if they're going to make a mistake, I'm there to say, okay, stop. However, if it's a mistake I think I can fix, then I'll allow them to make the mistake, you know, as long as it's not going to put the dog at harm. But what I'm teaching that student is I'm teaching the student about handling, because I'm a firm believer is when you learn how to handle a dog correctly, then grooming will come a lot easier to you. So, you know, because we all kind of, I think a lot of people make grooming very confusing, where a student will feel like they have to learn every single breed there is, which you do not have to do that, because there are so many breeds that are groomed practically exactly the same. And even if you groomed a certain breed like another certain breed and there were slight differences, the owners aren't going to know the difference, because all the owners want is a nice, clean haircut. So I teach the students very, very similar to Melissa Maplanck's Theory of Five, where there's five major haircuts, five kinds of feet, five kind types of tails, and I keep it simple. And then I tell them when they're done with their course to carry on and do further education and to absolutely get a first aid certificate, because there's certain things which I believe students also should, like, you know, have be mandatory, but they do have, such as a first aid certificate. And I think they should go on to, you know, to go to CERN, make it mandatory, but they go to a certain amount of seminars per year. You know, I mean, over in the UK, we have four competitions as opposed to multiple ones in America. So it's important to try and encourage people to go to seminars. And also there's people out there, you know, which do master classes, like myself and other groomers, where we go travel around the UK and we do one-day master classes. So it's, you know, it's encouraging the people to go to these classes to learn, because when you learn, you can charge a lot more for what you do. And because the biggest problem in the industry, the way I see things, is people do not value their work and they do not value themselves. And I think if that was to change, you know, I think a lot of things would improve.
Great. Thanks for that. That was a great explanation. Do you see yourself sticking with the school for some time in your future now?
I probably am going to slow down from the teaching next year, because I want to write more books. I have some apps for the Android and iPhones and iPads, which I'm going to be coming out with over the next couple of months. And there's other things I really want to do. I mean, I love teaching, but I don't want to have that be my main job, because the problem in my life is I got so many things I'm doing, I need to focus on certain things. It's like this interview with you, I had to make sure that my iPad went off every day to say to me, you have an interview, a radio interview, do not forget, because I was dreading the thinking, oh my god, you know, that would not be good.
Right. I'm notorious for having reminder notes everywhere for myself.
Absolutely.
To be aligned with things. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It tends to work.
Yeah, I mean, now, sticky
Colin,
notes are very...
Go ahead. Now, what made you decide to make this book? And I know, and Melissa did help you get this published. So tell us about the book and what you were thinking.
I vowed not to say and I just did it. And I just did it again. Okay, so I wanted to write what would Colin do, because of the need I saw in the industry. I mean, every time I did a seminar or every time I've done a masterclass or had students come in or gone to a competition, I saw a great deal of insecurity. And from people worried about how to deal with customers, how to deal with, like business, how to deal with certain handling techniques and first aid and so on and so forth. And I wanted, originally I was going to start writing an autobiography, But, you know, and that's still in the pipelines maybe, but it's very, very, it's a painstaking thing, that is. So I changed the format to a question and solutions book, which I, you know, obviously it's a 101 questions and solutions for every dog groomer, and no matter if they're a beginner or a seasoned groomer, because, you know, the people that have purchased it and I've got their feedback, and which is the feedback I really wanted from the people that have been grooming for many years, I wanted them to be reassured that what they was doing was right, or they was thinking on the same page, and you know, and also, which I really emphasized on in the book, is the welfare of the animal, because through my life I've gone through all the phases from competing to everything having to be perfect, and now I'm back, maybe full circle, to the point where, you know what, I'm a commercial groomer and good is good enough, and you know what, the animal has to come first. And so and that's when I wanted the people that are new coming into the industry to understand you don't have to stress out so much about the haircut. And I know some people might disagree with me, but to me, the haircut is secondary. It's the how long that dog's on that grooming table for, you know, and are you brushing out mats and putting the dog through unnecessary pain and suffering? Because in the UK, we have a Pet Welfare Act which says, you know, but you have to follow the five animal freedoms, and one of the animal freedoms is, and it's not necessarily for dog grooming, it's for cows, you know, chickens, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it says you cannot put a dog through any unnecessary pain and suffering. And I remember years ago, I used to groom, you know, I used to spend an hour brushing out a dog. Nowadays, I don't spend more than 15 minutes. If it takes me more than 15 minutes, I shave it off. Because I will not jeopardize that dog's welfare for the sake of the owner's request. However, I will educate the owner and make him understand why I had to do what I did. So, excuse me, I saw this big need for people needing some quick answers, and some of the reasons, well, just by reading Facebook and seeing people post things like, I spent 3 hours brushing out a Shih Tzu, or I had a customer come in who was rude, or I had the customer coming in that was late, or I had a dog come in with a hematoma. So I got all these, you know, a lot of these questions from people's questions I've seen in seminars where they've asked me, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to make it into a book so people can look through it, have a quick reference. But more than anything, I wanted people to feel better about what they were doing, because so many groomers second guess their work. There's groomers out there which would never be in the competition ring, and you know what, that's absolutely fine. You don't have to be a competition groomer to get respect in my eyes. I think, you know, and then if you really look at the big picture, you know, if you put it into, you know, I would say 80% of people are commercial groomers, maybe 20% of people are competition groomers. It's a very, very small world, the competition world. So, you know, I tell people it's important to go to these things, but don't feel like you have to. Absolutely have to be in there to be respected, because you don't. So I saw all these questions being thrown at me, and all these insecurities being thrown at me, and also coming from myself too, because I mean, if you ask Melissa came to the UK and we did some, you know, filming. I'm a very insecure person. If I'm just standing there, if you put a dog in front of me, I'm absolutely fine. That's my prop. Give me a pair of scissors and I'll groom and talk till the cows come home. But, you know, so, you know, I also knew the insecurities in other people because of my own insecurities. So I wanted to try and help people, and after writing the book and after getting some quite emotional emails from people, you know, that it was like a thumbs up, but I did do the right thing. So that was the main reason.
That's great. What can we go back? I'm just really interested in the five factors. What did you call those? Is that that operate in the UK.
I wish I didn't bring this up now because I hope you're not going to ask me all the five freedoms. It's the Animal Welfare Act, and it's the five animal freedoms. And you know, one of the animal freedoms is, you know, I mean, obviously you have to provide food, shelter, and water to animals. Can put an animal through any unnecessary pain and suffering. And so, you know, I mean, they are strict on this, but once again, it's not for dog groomers. It's for the whole pet industry as a whole.
Right, I understand.
You know, so, and what's that?
Go ahead.
No, you know, but, and it makes it a lot easier when I'm dealing with my customers, because when a customer says to me, I want my dog Fluffy, and that dog cannot be Fluffy, I don't say to them, I won't brush out your dog. I just say, I'm not allowed to brush out your dog. It's not my job to put your dog through any pain or suffering. And actually, you know, it's a law. And when you say that, the owners understand it more. I think a lot of people think that we may be lazy when we say, I'm not going to brush out your dog. And I think to a point, the groomers have to be a little bit more understanding, but they can't just say, I won't do it or I can do it. They have to give the owners reasons why, which comes down to getting the dog on a more, you know, a more frequent schedule. You know, getting the dogs in, like I would say every 4 to 6 weeks. And also maybe give them like a little, you know, 5-minute grooming lesson, because, you know, the way the owners brush the dogs and the way we brush the dogs is totally different. They brush the top coat, we brush the actual undercoat. So it just comes down to, you know, not only educating ourselves, but educating our customers also. And it gives them a better understanding.
I have a copy of your book here, and it disappeared. That often happens in my office, as many people have come through here. And I had a couple of remarks that I was mentioning here, but what are some of your favorite, what do you think are some of your favorite and most unique ones out of the 100?
I think one of them is grooming as a theater, or grooming in theater. It basically is saying, when you walk into front of house of any business, take a restaurant or even take the theater, what you see in front of your eyes is beautiful. What happens behind the scenes, it could be absolutely chaotic, but you never want to bring that forward. So when a customer comes in the shop, they will look at your business as it is running, as fluent as can be. And when you come out to greet that customer, you may come out of a war zone back there with barking dogs, with water flying everywhere, with dryers going, but you have to greet them and talk to them like nothing is bothering you whatsoever. So I think that's one of my favorite ones. And also, I won't say it's my favorite because of the situation. I think how it was written and the compassion going into it. I think the dog dying in the salon, because it's one of them things where groomers don't want to talk about it, but it does happen. And I think it's important for groomers to understand, but it happens to everybody. And it's okay to talk about it. And also the very, very last one is very important to me, because it's telling groomers, no matter whether you go to a seminar or you compete, or it doesn't matter what you do in your chosen passion, like when you go to a seminar, you get a diploma, what says that you've attended. It's important to take these back, not to keep them in a drawer, but to put them in a frame. You want to put them in a frame. You want to put your rosettes up on the wall. You want to put your medals on the wall, and you want to talk to your customers about what you have done. Not, you know, we all know competitions happen on a weekend, so when you go back to work and the customer comes in and says, how are you? You tell them how you are. You tell them that you attended a seminar, because this is the way that we can let our customers know that we are trying to better ourselves, which in the long run will show through when it comes to their grooming. you know, on the actual dogs. And customers love it. I mean, I have customers say to me, okay, Colin, where are you off to this time? So, you know, it's an actual conversation piece where the customers are following me and, you know, and they're proud that their dogs are being groomed by me. And, you know, I mean, some of these dogs are like, oh, you know, well, you know, what I do is really nothing special. But to them it is. So, you know, and I've become really kind of, I've got to learn to, I guess, pat myself on the back sometimes and say, you know, what I do is a good job because, you know, people, you know, I mean, my students say, oh my God, you know, your scissoring is incredible. And to me, it's just part of my life now. Do you understand what I mean? But when I see somebody in a different profession do something incredible, I'm in awe too. So I understand where people are coming from. But, I mean, you know, getting back to the book, because, and you got to tell me to shush when I ramble on.
Okay.
You know, the last one is important because, it, I want people to really value what they do, and I want them to try and do better for themselves because, you know, once again, when I'm doing my seminars, people always say to me, I can't do that because I live in this area, or the people won't pay that, or the people won't do this. And you know what I tell people? I said, you know, it's all about trying. You want to try new things. And the key to this business is, one of the keys, is to have an open mind. There's no one way of getting from A to B. It's like when I'm teaching my student and I teach them to do something a certain way, and they're either left-handed and they can do it that way, or they come up with their own way, I don't stop them. I say, you know what, if it works for you and it's not jeopardized, it's not putting the dog in harm's way, then go for it. It's okay. So it's so, so important to have an open mind.
I agree. You know, you mentioned in this about the value. And one thing I learned watching my parents' very successful business, after they had sold it, 7-8 years later, we went back to do some business-side seminars. And we're doing it in this one area. And my mother hadn't been down to the business in all those years. And some of the old clientele would occasionally see her. And it was like, can I go back and give your mom a hug or whatever? It's like, you know, they really value the peace of mind of knowing that there was always good service, pets were taken care of.
Absolutely.
And if they were doing the right thing, taking their pet to you, because once you get that, they, you know, there's, you can even get, take some of those coupon-type shoppers that go around, they go, you know what, I don't want to go anywhere else. But they came back and just would like, you know, it was fun to see Madeline. I just, you know, for 22 years, I felt so good coming to you and having my pet. It's so important to me that I know my pet has the right person grooming it. So
absolutely,
that is something for groomers to pat themselves on the back a lot. Yes.
You know what, and that's why I say to groomers, you don't have to be the best groom in the world, but when the dogs walk into our salon, I greet the customers and I greet the dogs, and you know what, and I tell people, if you are a good groomer, that's all that matters, but also be, also provide incredible customer service, not just to the customer, but to the dog also, because it's important to me to see my dogs running in the shop. Now, we do daycare also. And I got a cockapoo called Alvin. He runs in that shop, and he absolutely loves it. He is dying to get in there. You know, and to me, that's awesome to see, and I know the customers love it. So, you know, and I tell people, actually, it was really funny. When I was working in Lansing, Michigan, there would be people that would call up Wagontails, and they wouldn't necessarily ask for me because, you know what, they love the girls. Karen Cooley, she had an amazing personality. And you know what, she was also a very good groomer. But you know what, her personality shone through everything. And so, you know, and with me, you know, I have sometimes, you know, over the years I've become a little bit, where the dog does mean everything to me. So maybe I come across to my customers sometimes a little bit harsh, because when I can't do something, I will say, I'm not going to do it. But then again, I do redeem myself by saying, look, I'm doing this because I know what's in the best interest of your animal. So, you know, because I try to groom dogs to people's lifestyles. People come into me and ask me ridiculous things to do on their dogs. If it's achievable and I think it'll look great, then I'll do it. But if it's unachievable and I know, but, you know, they've got a nanny looking after their kids and blah, blah, blah. If they've got a nanny looking after their kids, they sure, you know, sure as hell can't look after their dog. So, you know, I try and say, look, why don't you let me groom your dog so it's easy for you to take care of? And so by spending that extra time with the customers and educating the customers, they do respect you a lot more. You know, so it's important not to walk up, grab the dog, see you, and just say, see you later, and then, you know, and have no communication there. So I totally understand, you know, where you're coming from, where people do appreciate a good service.
And it's its own form of marketing, too, because that old saying that the lifeblood of grooming is referral, that is
absolutely
so true. I mean, it's, you know, my mother she would explain that one customer, she never looked at the customer as this is one groom or even eight grooms a year, but she would say, I'm looking at an average of 10 services, at least 10 years of, 8-10 services a year, and that person is going to bring me another 5 or 10 customers who's going to do the same thing, you know,
that's
if we
right.
do our job right. You know,
that's right.
And
exactly.
That way, we in those days we just had a small yellow page ad, and then we get up to these thousands of customers, which we never planned to have a big place, but it was that just that commitment to balancing my pet care services are as equally as important and as good as my client services, and it will market your business. You'll grow without a lot of advertising because
that's
people
right,
want
right.
to know they took their pet to the right place, and
that's
and
right.
That, you know. So, how do you feel being an author? What's it feel like? I mean, you know.
Well, considering I'm dyslexic, because you know what, I'm gonna, you know, I have to be really honest because that's the person I am. I've never been a great reader, and I don't think I think I've read one book in my life, which was Mice and Men. That was at school. of course, I do read grooming books, but they're not really reading. It's just like short little, you know, bits of typing here and there. What does it feel to be an author? You know what? It's a big achievement for me because, you know, and obviously it got a lot of things off my chest and my mind, and my mind goes a mile a minute, and I've always got these, you know, I'll be laying in bed and wake up at 4 a.m. with this, which seemed like an amazing idea, and then I put it by other people and they're like, you know, you should have just gone back to sleep. But, you know, so, but I do enjoy the writing, and it was really funny because I'm not an easy person necessarily always to work with, and that's where Precious came into it, because people always say to me, oh, Colin, you're so precious, because, you know, sometimes I'm a prima donna and sometimes I think I'm always right, but then again, I'm only human, so, and I do realize, but I'm not always right. And so that's where Precious came into the storyline, which made it a lot more interesting to write for me, because I didn't want it to be boring text. I wanted it to be funny, I wanted it to be serious, and I wanted the one sad story in there. So because I also understood that I'm not the only dyslexic person out there. So I wanted the book so somebody could read it and not feel like they had to read it all from page one till the end page. I wanted it to be so they could take out little snippets of it and say, you know what, okay, I can read the rest tomorrow, and they can just pick right up on it because it's short stories or short answers. And so, you know, it made it a lot more fun for me to introduce Precious into it, and you know, I think, but we all have our ultra egos in us, and she's quoted as not an ultra, you know, she's an ultra ego, not, you know, not an alter ego. And it's very true in my life. I'm a person, and I don't want to come across like I do have a, you know, like a multiple personality disorder, because I don't. But, you know, there's me, who is kind of gruff, and, you know, I can't stand a shave. I despise dressing up for any occasion. It's just not me. I'm a shorts and I'm a t-shirt guy, and that's the way I've always been. And then there's the precious part of me who is very regimented. Things have to be done a certain way, and it normally always comes down to welfare of the animals. If I see somebody leave a dog unattended on the table, I have an absolute cow, because I try to teach people, dogs, I don't care how well you know that dog, are unpredictable. And anything can happen. And in a dog grooming salon, many things do happen. So I try to always put a lot of emphasis on the welfare. You know, don't leave your dog unattended. Don't leave it unattended in the bathtub. You know, and because, you know, crazy stuff can happen. And I like things to be, you know, nice and fun and, you know, run smoothly. And, you know, I understand, but, you know, sometimes, you know, things do crop up and you got to take care of it. So that's the part of me that is the precious part, the one, the part that does like things done a certain way, and the customers have to be treated nicely, and the dogs have to leave happy, and dogs can't go through any, you know, torture or anything like that, just to please an owner. So,
well, and what you're hitting upon there is that one of the hardest things, you know, when my parents retired, then we went into one of their strengths was the business side. And this is what I learned over many years now, 20-some years, on when we used to do even our own seminars, is that trying to explain that groomers are artists, but if you're a groomer that's also in, whether you're a supervising employee or you own a business, the grooming state of mind is much different than the manager's state of mind, and yet you've got to be both. So you're stepping from in and out, and that's what makes sense. If you've got that manager side, then you will be fine running your own business. And some groomers have that, and some don't. Some get it after a while. It really helps if they have a mentor to see, I see, because, you know, how do you shift? And for some of us, it's easy. For others, they will learn by seeing it done. Or others will say, all I want to do is get in a cocoon and groom all day. And that's fine.
Exactly.
I'll hire you.
Exactly.
That's probably a great person to hire. You know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know, I think I've seen this in Dina Perry's seminars. I've seen him in Melissa Verplank's seminars and Danelle German's. And I sat in on Danelle German's seminar in Australia, and she hit some really good points. And she was saying, it's okay to do what you do best. So if you do own a grooming salon and you're not the best business person, then you need to hire somebody who can do the paperwork and who can do that. So that way you can focus on the grooming, which means you can groom more dogs to afford to pay that extra person to come in, whether it be from, you know, 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock or so on and so forth, or even 3 o'clock till closing, you know, so they can do the closing of the money and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we all think, you know, and I mean, I'm talking from for me too. You know, we are artistic people, and I like to look at ourselves. I always say we're like artistic people, emotionally crippled in some way, where we do wear a heart on our sleeve and we like to be creative. But while we're doing that, we're letting, obviously, some of the other most important things, you know, slide a little bit. So we need to, you know, making sure that there's somebody at the front of the house to welcome people and to have that personality and to draw the people in. And, you know, that way they can do their job, you can do your job, and then that, you know, like you were saying, it makes a good business. And I think over the years it's been the experience that I've had that has taught me to have more of a business head on my shoulders. I'm not saying I'm the best. I make some terrible decisions sometimes. But you know what? There's also people there to say, Colin, that's not right. You know, that's a silly idea, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I try and listen to them. But I do.
Great. Well, Colin, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and it's just gone by so quickly. Where can I know we've got some links where to get your book. Do you have some places that you want to recommend to our readers to get it direct?
Yes, to get it direct, you can get it from melissavaplank.com, White Dog Enterprises, they could even call the Paragon School and talk to Teresa if they want to order the book. If they're outside of the US, if they're in the UK, they can go on to ColinTaylorAcademy.org and order the book. They're the main. I know right now we're trying to get the book into different distributors. And also some ProCo, they carry the book in the United States. Poplar in Canada, they carry the book in Canada. And that's all I know, as you know, from now, because I just was in Hershey in Canada, in September. So we're still trying to get other distributors on board. So as far as it goes right now, it's just them few.
Oh, great. And I'm glad we got this interview in. You're my last interview for this year. And I know you weren't going to it, but you did real well. Drew, thanks for putting up with. I know you're a little under the weather today, but you did fine.
It's okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, also when it comes to the people that I talk to, if I can just talk for one more minute, when it comes
sure.
to furthering your education, it's important to go onto websites or competitions. But I've done a couple of videos for Learn to Groom Dogs.com, and I'm in my seminars I stress so much to people that when they have a problem doing a certain breed, or a problem with even when it comes to clipper maintenance or equipment, to go onto that website. And you know what? It's even when it comes to your websites, websites that they have to subscribe to or even pay some money to, it's very important, and in the long run, it will only pay off. Because, when they pay that little bit of money to join a website and to learn a little bit more about grooming dogs, they can charge a little bit more to their customers. And then that little bit more money they charge their customers, it won't seem such a big loss in their pocket. So, there's many ways of learning.
Yeah, Melissa's done wonderful with that website. It's very popular with our Groomer Talk community. It's a great deal, and it's just wonderful to see in the last 10 years how much education has turned into available because of the internet. It's just absolutely.
I think it's maybe I forget how many. I should have checked before, but I forget how much it is for a month subscription. And I've had people say to me, "But how can I afford that?" And you know what I do in my life, and takes. If I want to buy something extra, If I go to work in the morning, I got a choice. I can either make instant coffee or I can go up to the cafe and buy an expensive coffee. So I try and not to, all them little tiny things what I classify as, little luxury things in my life, I try and hold them back. And I put that into a pot. And then the most important things, which I really do need to do in my life, that I can pull from that pot and buy them things. So, and that's why I tell my customers, when my customers say to me, you're too expensive, and they're holding a 3-pound tiny cup of coffee from the cafe up the street, I say to them, if you didn't buy that coffee every single day, you'd be able to afford my prices. And they laugh at me, and they know I'm right. So, yeah.
Sure, I agree. That's correct. Okay, Colin, I'm going to end the show here and let you go, and we want to stay in contact with you. Let us know any new projects you have coming down line. You can always send me an email or something, and we'll keep getting the word out there for you. I've enjoyed your book very much, and I highly recommend it, because some people thought, oh, it's just another instructional grooming book, and I say, no, that's not it. It's very enjoyable. Lots of great points of view to consider.
It's fun. It's easy reading. So, I hope people, go out and get it and have some fun with it and give me some feedback on Facebook. And if you see me on Facebook and if you're not my friend, you're more than welcome to friend request me, ask me some questions. And it's been really nice talking to you, Stephen.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.